And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 198. We got a Bloom board coming your way this evening on Monday night, not Tuesday night, as we have the holidays coming upon us, and we'll be busy. So we're going to knock this one out for y'all tonight. Before we get to the Bloom board, some news and more. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, the Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
I'm good. This is a nice break from wrapping presents. I've got your off-season news and notes part 7 post that you just posted up on the screen. I'm reading that one for the first time. As we like to say, I'm actually reading your stuff. Doing well. Feeling good about the wrapping situation. Again, like we talked about last show, not the quality but the progress. The progress bar is inching closer and closer to 100. So with a whole day to spare, only have one thing to assemble tomorrow night on Christmas Eve. So hopefully that goes well late night.
Good luck with that. I'll wrap in the morning tomorrow, call it a day, and get ready to cook. The Traeger will be fired up.
Oh, what are we? Okay. So we're
grilling. What I've done the last few Chris, like I used to do the old school, you know, steel prime rib. Let's do that and do it in the Traeger. Still great. But recently, the last 4 years or so, beef tenderloin has been the move. Big fan. Yeah. Costco's got some great meat. And we've been rolling that direction. Simple rub situation. Smoke it low and slow for about 4 hours on the old Traeger there. And turns out pretty good. So, yeah, big fan of that one. We'll see how it goes, though.
Any leftovers, send them up my way. I doubt there will be. But
no, this year there probably won't be because I have 10 people at the house this year. So there'll be a lot of noons and red wine flowing this year. Yeah. That's for darn sure. But
More noons than people, probably.
Yes.
Just real quick, a bunch of like our kind of core chatters are in the YouTube. So we've got Kevin Hastings saying aloha, everyone, and mele kaliki maka to all. We've got Dom saying Merry Christmas. Uncle Ted says Happy Christmas. Michael C. says Merry Christmas, as does Scott Burke. So what's up, everyone? Glad you're spending your Christmas Eve with us.
Yep, and we'll be here Thursday night as well, doing another Bloom board. We're doing hitter ADP tonight. We'll do pitcher ADP on Thursday night, so got that coming for you. And starting next week, next Thursday, position previews with the GOAT catching position. So be prepared for that, of course, everybody. Be ready for catcher previews coming your way and then every other position thereafter. Anything else you'd like to hit, Ryan, before we talk about some news and notes before the wonderful Bloom board that you have assembled?
No, I think I'm caught up enough on your article here that I can speak to these news and notes that you put on the outline.
Sounds good. All right, lots of action has taken place recently since the last time we talked, and especially while we slept last night. So we'll get to that. But some of the bigger news here, Christian Walker, first base went crazy the last week. That's been big, especially when it's usually quiet after the winter meetings until the New Year's. So this has been pretty productive. Christian Walker signs at the Houston Astros on a 3-year deal. Walker with the good old Crawford boxes won't be bad. He said he's in an interview on actually Sunday or Monday. Said he likes the appeal of the Crawford boxes, were his words, and he's very intrigued by the barbecue sauces in Houston. So this guy's a man of my own heart already. Already a big Christian Walker fan. Move him up a rank or two. But I don't have a lot of fantasy insight here besides he's going to be a stud. Paredes will play third. And the GM has already said that pretty much ends the Alex Bregman party in Houston.
Yeah, it sounds like the Bregman thing to Houston is done. Yeah, not much to say about Christian Walker. I mean, it does, obviously moving to Houston, I think, does bump him up quite a bit because he does pull a little bit more than league average and also hits the ball in the air a ton. I mean, a 48% fly ball rate last year for Christian Walker. It's making those pull fly balls count in Houston. So I'm trying to pull up ADP. I mean, so much of the damn position has changed. He's going in between at first base. He's going right before Tristan Casas, which we just talked about on our last show, like give me Walker all day, going just after Josh Naylor at the position. And then quite a bit after. Yeah. Like Pete Alonso, who was not signed yet, but Christian Walker moves up quite a bit for me. I think he can get 40 home runs. Honestly,
I think he's a big boy bat driving in tons of runs. That offense will still be good. I know Tucker's gone. Bregman will be gone, but it'll still be productive.
Dude, you're still hitting around Yordan, Altuve's there. Like there's plenty of juice.
Assuming
they don't make any more moves, but
big assumption. They still need to get some outfield help, most likely. So we'll wait and see on that. But big move for Christian Walker. More first base news. Josh Naylor traded from the Guardians to the Diamondbacks to basically take Christian Walker's spot. I've been saying all along, we love Naylor on the show, the big man. We've talked about it. It was a career year, so you have to expect some regression to obviously take place. I just think he'll be very good. I'm not going to downplay him a ton there. And we've seen guys thrive, especially left-handed bats in Arizona. So I don't have a whole lot of concern here unless you do.
No, not a whole lot of concern. Actually, just tangentially, I wonder, is Cleveland done? Like, what's the impact? If Cleveland's willing to trade Josh Naylor, are they, I know it's not directly related to Naylor, but are they now more willing to trade Emmanuel Class A, which would open up, save situations in Cleveland? That's something I don't really know the answer to, but it's one of the first things I thought of when I saw this break is like, if Cleveland's ready to do this with Naylor, with Andrés Giménez that we saw earlier this offseason, it's are they done or will they keep selling off pieces?
It is a great question. And we'll do more Cleveland's talk here in a minute before we talk panic meter of some people on that trade. I wanted to just comment about Pavin Smith because some people were hoping Smith to be the first baseman in Arizona. The GM has already come out and said, again, take all this GM talk with grains of salt, but that's all we have to go off of right now. They still want to give Smith all the DH at bats with right-handed pitching. I call it AKA the Jock Jams role.
He's Jock Peterson.
Which works very well, and Smith has power to produce 20 to 25, maybe more home runs depending on that. But I think 20 to 25 home runs, if he plays that all year, is very, very viable. So for those that might be like, oh, there goes Pavin Smith. No, it does not mean, oh, there goes Pavin Smith. So for now, we're still okay in that regard.
Yep. Yep. He will be talked about. Pavin Smith will be talked about plenty in season fab, depending on how many righties the Diamondbacks face in a certain week.
Now, speaking of the Guardians with Josh Naylor out of town, everyone's like, Kyle Manzardo, come on down. Stop.
Nope.
Carlos Santana is returning to Cleveland, where he once spent many a years as the first baseman. Now Carlos Santana is back with the Guardians on a 1-year deal. He should play a ton, is the way I look at it, because he can switch hit. We know he's better. He's not like the best in the splits department, but he's still very good. Manzardo will still get plenty of at-bats at DH, maybe even at first base. The biggest thing is it might just take longer for him to become eligible at first base. But we've been Carlos Santana fans at his ADPs in recent years, even in FAB, like you've mentioned. So I like the move. The powers for lefties in Cleveland's very good.
Yeah, I think Santana's a good, like an attractive buy right now in draft and hold season at 340. Like in FAB leagues, I'm not really, Carlos Santana is kind of like the type of profile that I'm not taking in FAB leagues. I want that kind of low floor, high ceiling type of thing with my reserve bats. And Carlos Santana is definitely not that. But if you're in draft and hold and you need that playing time, you need at bats, I like Carlos Santana quite a bit. Kyle Manzardo, like I'm not too worried. Maybe I'm off on this, but I'm not too worried about Kyle Manzardo's playing time. It is more like, how long does he stay UT only? Because that does matter in fantasy. And it looked like for about, these were like minutes apart, weren't they? The trade and the signing.
Yeah, they're right after each other. It's like Cleveland had this lined up the whole time.
Yeah, the dream of Manzardo to first base, at least for now, was halted rather quickly.
Yep, with you on that one, but he should be fine. And Manzardo's going like 7-8 picks ahead of Santana right now in drafts. So decide with that what you will. So I'm going to say I think I'll take Santana for the first base part of it because I hate the – but I have some Manzardo shares already.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd probably go Manzardo, but both – I don't have a – it's not beer bet worthy.
No, it's not. Oldie is off the board. Oldie is headed to the Bronx.
Yes. This is creative of you weaving in a Christian Walker, Paul Goldschmidt news update pretty much back-to-back, bringing in my pretty much worst beer bet of 2024, bringing that one back to life. So well done.
I've done a few of these before. Goldschmidt signing with the Yankees. We knew they had a hole at first base that is filled for now. Some people are saying Goldie's too old. He's going to keep faltering. We've talked on the show, Ryan, that the second half was better for Goldschmidt. We saw improvements there. There's been plenty of talk about his inability to catch up the fastballs as he gets older. That is a concern, but if he can just be kind of that guy he was in the second half, not great, but not bad in that offense, that lineup, I think where he's getting drafted is pretty darn awesome.
I mean, even if Goldie like repeats 2024, it was a .245 batting average, 22 homers, 11 steals. Like not great by any means, but like even that with the awful first half, I think is certainly rosterable, if not attractive, if you wait on first base a little bit. So yeah, love the move for Goldie. Anytime you go to Yankee Stadium, even though he's not a super oppo guy, so I don't know how much he takes advantage of the short porch. Only a 36% fly ball rate last year from Goldschmidt. But again, I just think the biggest thing with Goldschmidt was again that second half, how he finished. Not to cherry pick first and second half stats, maybe that's what I'm doing here, but I was very concerned that the end was near for Paul Goldschmidt in the first half. Like it was very brutal. Like it was Nolan Arenado-esque yeah. type of fall there. And it was good to see Goldschmidt not only turn things around, but run a ton, 7 bags in the second half. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if that happens with the Yankees or not, but certainly have to like that move if you are an old Schmidt supporter like I was last year.
Well, I'm an old Schmidt supporter this year. I've been enjoying the ADP of 197.
Are you?
Yeah, I've got some shares. Yeah, ADP of 197, gone as high as 179 in the month of December. After that, it drops off to like Luis Urias, and then it drops off to Yandy Diaz, and then CES is at 230. So there's quite a cliff, it feels like, going from Goldie down below, unless you're a Mountcastle guy or a few others. But Goldie's kind of definitely the end of the line type situation there. All right, another first baseman move. The Washington Nationals and the Rangers. Rangers been quite active this offseason. The Nationals acquire Nathaniel Lowe from the Texas Rangers for Robert Garcia, a picture which might have some relative fantasy appeal at some point in time in Texas. But for now, Nathaniel Lowe in Washington, we kind of know who he is. Better real-life player than fantasy player probably, but what's your thoughts on Lowe in Washington?
This was made about 3 hours after I took Juan Yepez in the draft and hold that I'm currently in. So that was a little bit disappointing, but really how much can you expect out of Juan Yepez? I did not see this one coming. I mean, I think for Nathaniel Lowe, it's neutral, honestly. I mean, Texas was so bad as a lineup last season. And I mean, we've talked about this a few times. Washington's lineup, I think, is sneaky good, especially the top half of the Nationals lineup. So I like that. I think this cements your boy, Jake Berger, as the first baseman. Is that what you have in your notes, news and notes?
Yep. Pretty much it had, well, especially when we talk about another move the Rangers made, but it has Josh Jung at third, Jake Berger at first with Lowe out of town. Makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, agreed. And Robert Garcia, if the Rangers don't, I think they're going to sign Kirby Yates, aren't they?
Yeah, that was a rumor that dropped a couple hours ago. So, yeah, and it makes too much sense.
Like, that's a glaring hole in the Rangers roster, and there are plenty of free agent options out there. It just makes sense for Yates to go back to where he was. So I wouldn't put too much stock, even though, like, maybe at this second, Garcia is a somewhat favorite to close in Texas. I don't think that lasts.
All right, I'll do one more bat. I'm going to jump around the outline here, so bear with me, Ryan. Then we'll go to the mound. But I wanted to mention the other Rangers pickup. Oh, yeah. They signed Jock Jams. Jock Peterson is a big boy move for Texas. This lineup is video game-esque almost, the way they're building things there in Texas. Jock Jam will be the primary DH versus right-handed pitching like we've seen before. And when you can slot him into that lineup, that is going to be a ton of thump coming out of Texas.
It's interesting. Paven Smith and Jock Jams are going 4 picks apart in drafts in December. Who are you taking?
Ooh, I think I'll take Jock Jams based on team context.
I will too. I think there's a little bit of a higher floor there. Like Paven Smith could still fall apart. And I trust, although the Diamondbacks could freaking hit last year, I feel like I trust Texas's lineup a little bit more than Arizona's, but could be way off on that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It'll be interesting. Arizona, they surprise us a lot. Yeah, they were in the World Series a couple years ago. Last year, they were still very serviceable. A lot of it relies on Marte's back. Let's be real. And can Eugenio do it again? There's a lot of what ifs in Arizona, but we expect Corbin Carroll to bounce back. That there is quality options there. It's just, do they have enough? Texas has literally 1 through 9. You can almost make an argument for all of them, which is pretty, pretty impressive.
Interesting comment or question from Kevin in the chat. Do we look at some more stolen bases from Nathaniel Lowe in Washington? Something I didn't even think about at all, because
it's a great point.
Nathaniel Lowe has 5 steals over the last 3 years combined, but as we know, Washington runs a ton, or ran a ton last year at least. Nathaniel Lowe stole 8 bases in 2021. Like, it is possible. And for his career, the projection at HQ is like a 90% success rate. So he can steal bags if the team lets Nathaniel Lowe do it. So that's
Washington runs.
So that's a pretty good call out there from Mr. Hastings.
Yep, love it. Good call, Kevin. All right, let's head to the mound here. A couple moves. Jesus Luzardo, the Jesus Lizard, has been traded to the Philadelphia Phillies. We know Lizardo's been battling injuries, but when healthy, is a top-end arm. It's a when healthy thing is what comes from Jesus Luzardo. But like I said, if the Phillies are willing to trade for him, I think it makes you think he's healthy. That's all we know. That's all we can go off of right now. So if healthy, I love this move for fantasy purposes, because we got Jesus Luzardo coming at a gift of an ADP right now at at 338. He's gone as high as 287 since the trade. So that'll keep coming up. Like, at that price point, like we were talking off air, Ryan, like, how do you not take a shot at that point?
That sticks out as super cheap for Jesus Luzardo, even if you're worried about the health. The point was made in our Discord shortly after the trade that not only is, you know, this could be seen as a positive sign of health. Like, Philly is, on the whole, they have been pretty good with starting pitcher injuries. They are no Los Angeles Dodgers. Like, you've got Nola, you've got what they've done with Wheeler late in his career, becoming innings machines. Like, yeah, Ranger Suarez has had some back problems and stuff, but I don't know if you can pin that on the Phillies. Like, this is a team that has a pretty good track record with starting pitcher injuries. And so I still struggle with being too confident in Jesus Luzardo, but if that ADP stays like 250 or even outside the 200s, kind of have to take a shot, don't you? At least on a team or two.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, because if he's outside 200, he's your SP4 or 5, depending on how you're drafting. Maybe if you're getting real crazy, but SP4 or 5 is pretty darn appealing for a guy that legit has SP1 or 2 upside if he's healthy. Like, he's a beast if healthy. And again, it's a big if with Luzardo. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it like a ton, but at that point in the draft, when you look at the other pitchers going around him, it's like, do you want Luzardo? Like, you have Brady Singer going in front of him. You have Jameson Taillon. I think I'd obviously take Luzardo over both of them if I'm taking shots. That's kind of the world he's in right now.
And all you have to do is look back like a year. I mean, it's not like you're speculating on Jesus Luzardo to do something he's never done before. In 2023, Luzardo threw 180 innings, 210 strikeouts with pretty good ratios. So kind of can't believe it, but I'm talking myself into Jesus Luzardo. But yeah, let's see how much the price rises with the move. It will.
Yeah, it will. It will. So you got to get on that one quickly. Sean Manaea returning to Queens to the New York Mets on a 3-year deal. Good for him. Coming off that big boy year, hopefully he can keep it going. ADP 181, as high as 158. I've been in on Manaea anyways because I like the improvements we saw. And I almost like this more going back to where the improvements were to kind of keep things going, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I'm still a fan of Manaea at this point.
Also part of my cursed draft and hold, I took Griffin Canning a couple hours before the Manaea news drop, which honestly –
Can you start letting us know every pick you make pretty soon? Because that would be awesome for us trying to get ahead of the curve in our draft.
Freaking double, man. Got double hit, like in almost consecutive rounds or a few rounds apart, my two picks. But I'm probably saving myself from Griffin Canning, if we're being honest. No, for Manaea, I don't have much. It's great to go back to where he was for a team that let him kind of tweak that arm slot that everyone's kind of talked about, that Chris Sale arm slot. The Mets let him do it, and it worked great. So I think with stuff like that, it probably didn't matter where Manaea was going to sign, but it can't be a bad thing to go back to where he finished on a heater. So
yep, I'm with you there. And the last bit of major news we're going to talk about here is Walker Buehler signs a 1-year, $21 million deal with the Boston Red Sox. Buehler, rough season coming back from surgery, but pitched very well in the postseason, which got the price tag elevated. and lands him in Boston in a rotation that continues to improve. They've added Garrett Crochet this offseason, obviously. You still have Tanner Houck there, who was serviceable, Brian Bayo, Cutter Crawford. Now you got Buehler in town. They have other options deeper down the board. If you like, Lucas Giolito should be back at some time. Oh, same with Patrick Sandoval. Patrick Sandoval midseason. So they're starting to bring it together. But what's your thoughts on Buehler? Because this is the guy I told you, ADP of 268, as high as 259 right now. If we get the postseason Buehler, that is a gift. If you don't get the postseason Buehler, this is going to make you puke in your mouth.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to be puking in my mouth. Maybe not. Uncle Ted disagrees. Uncle Ted says Walker Buehler is this year's Jack Flaherty, which is...
That means you should be on board.
It's an interesting comp. I like that. Kind of former ace derailed by injury and back. Yeah, you're weighing that what we saw in the regular season, which was pretty brutal stuff from Walker Buehler, was him just kind of ramping back up. But it was 108 innings across the majors and the minors. Like, it was not a small sample compared to the playoffs, where it was, or the postseason, as we say in this sport. I've got college football on my mind, where it was just 10 innings. And it was a great 10 innings. It was 13 Ks, 10 scoreless with better velocity. Jesus Luzardo or Walker Buehler. I feel that price tag's about the same.
I'll take Luzardo all day.
I will too, without even thinking about it that much. Because I think Luzardo, at least if he's healthy, is going to be effective, I think. Whereas Walker Buehler could, like you said, make us puke in our mouth. So.
Yeah, no, that's where when we were talking Lazardo, I was going to ask you, you better talk about Buehler first before I throw that conundrum out there. Yeah, I'm with you. And right now, Buehler's going ahead of Lazardo, but I think if we have this conversation in, let's just say, 2-3 weeks, that'll be different. So, especially the first sign we see Lazardo pitching anywhere, that'll change quickly. So, keep that in mind as well. All right, that'll wrap up the news for tonight. It is Bloom Board time, Ryan. What do we have in store?
Christmas themed. Where the hell is it? Here it is. See, I am off my game. It's not like riding a bike. We haven't done Bloom Boards in a little while on this show. I mean, most Bloom Boards are Christmas themed because I've got the green risers and the red fallers. It's just my style. But it's that time of year. We've got enough drafts in the bucket to be able to start comparing ADP trends, which I'm actually starting working on this as a auto updating tool live for our Patreon subscribers as well. But for this one, we're just doing a snapshot of November versus December ADP. Simple as that. We're looking at Gladiator drafts for this comparison, mostly because Gladiators, most of them are that day. So we know that these drafts took place actually in December versus November. And there was just a bigger sample size. I looked at draft champions and there were only 8 December drafts. And of those 8, I don't know. NFBC counts them when the draft ended. So I don't know how many of those actually took place in December. But anyway, so these are 15-team leagues drafted that day. We are looking at, and we've done these ADP comparisons before, but how I have them ranked is by the value of the pick as opposed to a sheer number of picks. So moving from the 5th round to the 3rd round is a big deal, whereas if you move from the 26th round to the 23rd, even though that's a higher delta, those picks don't matter as much. So I took the value of the picks for how I'm sorting these guys. And our risers for the YouTube and the streaming crowd, our risers are in green on the left, which I guess we'll talk about first. I don't know. That's your call.
Yep. Fallers on the right. We go left to right in here in America. So we'll start on the riser side first. Yes.
Reading direction. So many different ways you could take that.
Earlier today we talked about neither one of us read, so it's okay. So don't worry about it.
I mean, I don't, it's been a little while, but I don't read from right to, maybe I should read your columns from right to left.
Maybe it'll sink in more. All right, we'll start with the first riser on the board here. It's a very popular riser. He's rising in DCs as well as Matt Shaw, the Chicago Cubs, November ADP of 341 and up to 289 now in December, and honestly that's going to keep climbing in other draft forums. Keep that in mind, because with Isaac Paredes out of town, the Cubs have said they're going to give Matt Shaw pretty much every chance to take the starting third baseman job in Chicago. We saw the massive Arizona Fall League, Ryan. Dude's got some power and speed, and projections like him to be almost a 15-15 guy. So there is definite upside with Matt Shaw. What are your thoughts on this jump? Because like I said, it's only going to go higher.
You think it's only going to go higher?
Yeah, because like, I know we're doing gladiators, but just for fun, let me pull up December, just for a conversation point. Third base ADP in DCs. Right now he's the 29th third base. He's gone as high as 239 in this format.
Yeah,
that's if you just look at other third basemen, it's an ugly man. It's ugly.
That's what I'm looking like. At first, my initial instinct is don't take the rookie adjustment period, blah blah blah. But yeah, like where Matt Shaw is going amongst third basemen, what I'm looking at, he's going behind Jose Caballero, Noelvi Marte. I would take a shot on Shaw, who had an excellent season in 2024 across those three levels, like you said, the AFL, to wrap it out. So I get it, and yeah, the price is cheap, but you're right. I think the price is going to go up, but it could go up and still be. He's still going like 30 picks behind. I don't want to slander my guy Slick Willie Castro, but like Ryan McMahon, Max Muncy, like if you don't like those guys, you want to take a stab at ceiling. Matt Shaw's he's better than he's more attractive than I thought he'd be, given where he's going and who's around him.
What I like about him is the projections have him at 14-14. He's shown power and speed in the minors at last season at Double A, 14 homers and 25 steals in 86 games, 7 homers, 6 steals in 35 games at Triple A. You mentioned the fall league, and you for average. So you got a power speed bat, which I like. And when you look at all these third basemen going in front of them, it's one or the other. You're not getting both, basically. Yeah. Like Isak Paredes, he's taking Isak's spot, is 50 picks ahead of him. Do you want the potential 25 to 30 home runs from Isak with maybe a dead average and limited steals, or do you want Shaw? Like that's just a lot of it'll be team context, and that's a boring answer, but it's the truth when you're building these teams. But when you look at a guy that could potentially give you like 4 to 5 pretty at least above average categories at that point in the draft, it's pretty nice. So
well, Andy's like, I know we're not in fab mode yet, fab league yet, but he's kind of like the point I made about Carlos Santana, that high floor, low ceiling type. Matt Shaw's the anti Carlos Santana, where like this is the type of player I want to take in my reserves, because if it doesn't work out, I'll just cut him and move on. If it works out, great, you hit pretty well. So
and Michael C in the chat says that Chris Clegg, our buddy, said on the Toolshed pod that he has Shaw over Campbell.
Christian Campbell, Shaw, I assume.
Yeah, Christian Campbell, and who projects at second base long term. So
yeah.
Okay. That could be fun as well. Yep. All right, next on the board here, Danny Jansen went from ADP of 342 to 298. That's because you need two starting catchers, hopefully, and Jansen should be the starting catcher in Tampa Bay.
Yep, and should be good as long as he stays healthy. That's always been the thing with Danny Jansen. I've always loved Danny Jansen's skills. It's just he's never had a season of 325 plate appearances, which is really bad, and he's 30 years old. So even if you have the starting job, you enter opening day with the starting job, Danny Jansen has not shown the ability to finish a season before, and maybe that happens for the first time. But just know if you're taking Danny Jansen, you'll probably get some decent production in spurts, but you will also probably be scouring the waiver wire for his replacement at some point.
And in a gladiator, it's fun because you get the good spurts, he gets hurt, and it's probably better than the later round catchers you're taking. So
it's a good point.
There's a plus to that as well. Isak Paredes, 272 in November to 238. Crawford boxes, everyone's saying it. That's got to be the reason, I'm guessing.
It is. It's actually curious. It's not curious. It's interesting. Isak Paredes' steamer projection only went up by one home run pre-post trade. Went from 24 to 25. Is it still at 25? You're looking bewildered. You're screaming.
Paredes, he was.
I think he was 24, and I think he's still 25.
He's the 21st. Oh, you're looking at steamer.
Oh, his projection. Yeah, it's still 25 homers. Yeah, steamer. Yeah. Steamer only gave him one more home run by going to the Crawford boxes. I think I take the over on 25 home runs for Isak. But like you were just saying, comparing him with Matt Shaw, like all you're getting is those homers. I guess decent runs and RBI to go with it if the lineup stays good. But you're not getting really any batting average and no steals from Isak, but the rise is certainly deserved, and I still might take Isak over Matt Shaw in draft and holds, because I just think the playing time safety is there, and playing time's everything right now in draft and holds.
All righty. After Isak Prettis, Wilson Contreras, 94 ADP to 84. That's not a massive jump, like, but it is compared to the rounds like you prefaced earlier. Yep. It's got to be the first base eligibility makes that really attractive. We talked about it on some other shows, like on our targets, that Wilson becomes very, very enticing.
We are not the only ones who have picked up on Wilson Contreras getting extra plate appearances at first base. Current ADP for Wilson makes him the sixth catcher off the board. And I think in both of our catcher rankings, he was fifth. We have him up above Cal Raleigh, and the market has Cal Raleigh ahead of Wilson Contreras. I stand by that.
That's fair. That's fair. Victor Robles going from 215 to 199. I haven't really
seen a ton
of news saying, like, I'm looking at this one, kind of figuring out what has changed in Victor Robles' profile. A little bit of power, tons of speed, okay average, tons of injury risk. I don't know. Honestly, this one, it surprises me a little.
Maybe it's the, God, I'm going to sound like a douche. I put a, in the baseball forecaster, I wrote Victor Robles' box and put upside 50 stolen bases. And I don't know, maybe Gladiator folks don't read the forecaster. That's the only thing I can think of. There was no other change with Victor Robles from a team context standpoint that comes to mind right now.
Yeah, it's team context. Mariners not doing anything, basically. It's all I can think of. But the second you get in love with that, Dylan DePoto is going to do something. So be prepared. But, you know, because they got Victor in center, what is it, Victor, J-Rod, and Rosarena. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be a lot of moving parts in the outfield then. So I guess you could feel safe as long as he's healthy. That's a positive.
Yeah, no, I honestly don't like to take rabbits. But if you are behind in steals at 215 or whatever, 199 now for Robles – like I said, I put upside of 50 bags. Like, he could be a game changer and give you batting average while doing it. So he's not just a rabbit. I think the batting average, we've got him projected for 274 in the book. And that, I mean, that would play depending on where Victor Robles hits in the lineup. If he hits, if he hits near the top, it could be pretty solid three categories, batting average, runs, and stolen bases. So I wouldn't totally cross him off, but I'd need to be pretty desperate in steals to take. To take Victor Robles. It's just, I like being more balanced than what he is.
Agreed. Yvonne Herrera goes from 260 to 239. That's strictly, in my opinion, with Wilson going to first, Herrera likely catching more, gets the bump. We know Herrera's got a really good bat. Defense is suspect. That's why Pajes is around, Pedro Pajes. But Herrera should still be the dude. The dude can rake. So that's my thoughts.
And I think properly priced, like, I don't have our rankings up in front of me, but like going between Connor Wong, Ryan Jeffers, Kirk, and Joey Bart, like, I might take Herrera of that crew, probably Jeffers, but like I think he's properly priced.
I'd take Herrera in that, and I might be talking negative on my rankings, but just top of my head, I would take Herrera in that group.
What about the next guy up is your boy, Sean Murphy, at a 220 ADP, 20 picks ahead of Herrera.
Yeah, I think we'll go. I think we'll go Herrera on that one too. You know, I'm anti Murphy.
The next catcher is Kieber Ruiz.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, we know where I'm going there. Yeah, Kieber will win that one, but not by much. All right, Jonathan India getting the trade boost, 262 to 243 ADP. Going to be leading off in Kansas City, and we've talked about it before. As I know, Kansas City gets that kind of like, oh, it's a bad hitter's park, but we talked about Vinny P as one of my targets for when I kind of backed up why I thought that, at least right or wrong. That was my thoughts. India should be one of NEP's RBI sources. Like, India's got elite OBP skills in front of – you mentioned how Robles could score a ton of runs. India could be in for 100-plus runs scored if he leads off every day in Kansas City. So I see the definite appeal at that ADP at 243. That's pretty good.
So it's got to be the – because, I mean, he got traded out of Great American Small Park. Yet but still rises.
Potential platoon and not, there was a lot of questions there since he were now he's kind of locked in, it feels like.
Locked in. However, God, he's still only 28. India feels like an old man, but those injuries do scare me. But I don't know, 637 plate appearances from India last year, so maybe they shouldn't scare me as much as I'm perceiving that.
Yeah, that works for me. And India, I've started to be a little more in on in drafts, especially underdog, which is an OBP format. And I know I try to interweave that in here once in a while just to kind of bring that mindset in. But it could be a big, big later round target in an underdog format for that same reason.
360 OBP or 357 OBP for India last year, 13% walk rate. That's why he's leading off, folks.
Yep. Bingo. Because that was not what Mikel Garcia was doing. Jeremy Pena, ADP of 180 up to 167. I know there's been a little bit of hype behind Pena on the streets these days, but I'm not going to say it's a bad move. It's 13 picks. I still think Pena is the same guy, though. I haven't seen a massive reason to get excited.
Yep. Agreed. Interesting seeing him next to Mason Wynn.
Yes, right. Mason Wynn, right. I'm very hyped on.
And at the same ADP, Jeremy Pena has risen to 167. Mason Wynn has risen to 165. Like I, a lot of people like Mason Wynn, yourself included. So I'm assuming you'd go Wynn over Jeremy Pena at their new price.
It's a win-win situation, yes.
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I'll give it to you.
All right. Ryan Mountcastle, 262 to 246. He's healthy, should be the regular at first base, they're saying, and the walls have been moved in Baltimore. So I'm guessing that's got something to do with it. We talked about the first base fall off when we're talking about Goldie. Mountcastle's kind of the next guy. Like I, in the draft I'm in right now, I took Goldie late, and I took Mountcastle real quickly as my corner infield to back up Goldie. So I could see a little appeal there to get some later power.
Going next to Nathaniel Lowe, 245 or 246 and 250. Respectively, I think I'd go Nathaniel Lowe.
Nathaniel Lowe over Mountcastle. I'm not saying it's wrong. I can give you the really bad answer team context if you need power. I want Mountcastle, but overall, batting average, okay power, maybe more steals like you talked about, and should be the primary run producer in that offense. You think in the middle of that order, Lowe is becoming a little more intriguing, and I never thought we'd say that before the show.
I'm kind of, as you're talking, I'm falling into the same trap that screwed us last year, which maybe we can wait on first base.
No,
that did not work last year. Nope.
And I've already gotten screwed, and I'm going to write about this actually on the Patreon, because I usually don't go pitching heavy. I went pitching heavy on the draft I'm in now to kind of see where it would go. And using your awesome tool, chart thing, I'm still, like, my numbers are still in line with the 80th percentile, so that's good if you believe in the projections. It just feels disgusting. That's all I'm going to say. It feels rough in the hitting departments, because when Goldie is my first baseman, that's not how I haven't left that way in any other draft so far, let's put it that. Like, I've been much more aggressive at first base.
So. Just to clarify, the tool chart thing, it would be
this is the caveman trying to explain.
Would be has a name called the draft and hold team tracker, which I use, and I made it available for everyone on the Patreon, and people have liked it. So we'll call it the draft and hold team tracker. So
we're sheet the tool thing. Chart. Yes, thing. Yes, the draft and hold team tracker sheet thing. Yes, over there at the old Patreon place. All right, Mike Trout, 148 to 138, because he's supposedly healthy right now, I guess.
That was one of the comments to either in the Discord or on Twitter. It's like, yeah, Rico, I think that's from Arico. Yeah. Saying, hey, Mike Trout's healthy for another month. He's going to go up 10. And maybe every month Mike Trout is healthy, it goes up another 10, which I don't say I agree with it, but it kind of makes sense. The closer that Mike Trout gets to opening day with health, the closer you have a chance, maybe a slim chance, of him staying healthy longer. So I don't know.
Xavier Edwards goes from 170 to 160. Again, I don't know the exact reason why he's jumped to 10 picks. So it's not crazy, but we've talked about it, Ryan. Batting average is really good. Steals are amazing. Other than that, it gets murky.
I mean, if anything, he lost Jake Berger.
That's true.
So, like, fewer. So
he's going to be hungry and left on base.
Yeah, that's not a way to go through life. So, no. Yeah. And again, like, at this point, we are at the bottom of our riser. So, it is going from 170 to 160 is pretty small. And that could just very well be
preference
variance, right?
Tommy Edman, 205 to 192. I do like this. We've talked about him in FPAS and off and on. Once he got that extension with the Dodgers, he's basically locked into center field. The bummer part is we were kind of hoping at one time he'd be the shortstop at shortstop outfield. That's not happening, but he should play pretty much every day in a very loaded lineup with pretty good power and a ton of speed potentially. So I like this price tag. And honestly, in a vacuum, I think it should go even higher. If people just based their picks on projections, the projections I think are actually kind of low on Tommy Edman. So I should probably use the projections I'm speaking of for the listeners here. But when you're looking at Tommy Edman, like Steamer has him for 15 homers, 23 steals, 252. That's in 143 games, and he has 64 or 67 runs scored. Like a full season with the Dodgers, maybe the 15 homers is kind of fair, but I think you're closer to 30 steals and you're closer to like 90 runs scored. Like I think there's a ton that Edman can do there. Now lineups will dictate a lot, but I think there's a very nice, safe floor, high ceiling if healthy.
And even with those Steamer projections, Tommy Edman comes out as the, as I look at the rankings and projections tool,
sheet thing.
Tommy Edman, even with those Steamer projections, which, you know, it's a good projection. He comes out as the 110th hitter, going 121st among hitters so far in drafts. So I like Tommy Edman quite a bit. I was going to say this rise is from is the Bubba bump since your first pitch presentation on Tommy Edman, but that was back early November, so it's got to be the signing.
Yeah, the signing.
And I would wager some money that at some point this season Tommy Edman becomes second or short eligible. Just that's things fair. Happen.
Like how long happen. Do they want? How much longer do they want the Gavin Lux experience to take place?
Right. You know? Exactly. I would not be surprised if he gets 10 games there at some point.
That's fair. Very fair. Cal Raleigh, 87-81. I think it's just a catcher's thing. And my I think as people draft more, you like early. And again, this is just my brain could be speaking out of school. It feels like early drafting, it's like, okay, we're going to play the catcher chicken game. As drafting goes on later, everyone's like, I just want my catcher. It's like,
oh crap. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I just want my catcher. So now they become more aggressive. And because we've talked about this is our third catcher already on this list moving up. I think that's just a trend you see in some of these formats like Gladiators, where you have to start two, at least the fourth catcher, actually, draft and holds, where you kind of want two good ones. You're going to, in my opinion, you see a lot more of that than you do in a fab league.
Agreed.
And then Brenton Doyle, 83-78. It's the power of the speed. And maybe some people are looking for that 2020 upside later on in the draft if they went elsewhere.
This one's kind of interesting. Again, it's only five picks from 83-78, so it's not huge, but it is kind of interesting because Brenton Doyle is the ultimate, I think, like coming off a career year, regress to what type guy. And usually, could be way off on this, but usually it seems like those types of guys, as you are closer to the end of last season, they get more expensive and then projections start coming out. You start putting that recency bias to work and they start to fade a little bit, but that's not what's going on with Brenton Doyle. So just an interesting thing there with Mr. Doyle rules.
All right, let's go to the fallers side of things here. And trust me, if this seems like kind of wonky ADPs, when we go from like December to compare like December and January or whatever, start comparing more ADPs, things get a little tighter. So we'll have a little more going with it here. It's just really early degenerate drafting going on here. The fallers, Zach Neto, this one's clear. But I'll let you talk about it because you've drafted him a few times.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
167 to 198. What's the reason here, Ryan?
I mean, for me, it's the price. So I have taken Zach Neto in two of my drafts. And again, these are Gladiators. So it's a little different because in this format, and it doesn't really, I mean, at this point with Gladiators, NFBC has sold out the contest. But just a little context behind this ADP, there is no bench. So like you are stuck with Zach Neto the entire time. And I think I know this fall is because we knew Zach Neto was hurt and had shoulder surgery. I think the fall is because the Angels have been very vague about the status of Zach Neto's recovery, which doesn't give you the warm and fuzzy. So I have actually taken Zach Neto at 199 and like 202 in both of my draft and holds, which are near max picks in both of those. And maybe I'm the sucker for doing that, but I just think in a draft and hold or even a fab league, as those starts to come in, you can plan for that from a roster construction build. So I took a very early shortstop backup in Carlos Correa. I also took your boy, who's becoming your boy, is Scott Kingery in the 38th round. But I'm just trying to build in some kind of backups there to Zach Neto, knowing that maybe he misses the first month, misses the first 6 weeks. And for my own team aspect, that works. I know it's a risk because even if Zach Neto, you know, makes it for opening day or makes it sometime in April, what does the power look like? But I just feel like once you start getting around 200, that's the time where I'm willing to take a shot on someone who I think was like a legitimate fifth rounder before the news of the shoulder surgery hit. So that's kind of my take on it. I know it's risky, but I'm trying to mitigate that risk by taking other players around him and just kind of hoping it works out, which I don't know. A lot of times for me doesn't.
Yeah, I'm just torn because I love Neto. Like, if you've listened to the show long enough, I was all in on Neto last year. We had a lot of shares in Neto last year. Like you said, it's the vague stuff. Like, I've written about it. The only things I've been able to find is they can't guarantee he'll be ready for spring training, let alone the start of the season. They've said that much. But again, you can't guarantee he could still be ready. Like, you don't know this, but it seems like they're taking it slow. Who knows? The vague part kills me. Shoulders also, I get worried, like, how quickly can you bounce back from that? That worries me. But like you said, at least in a draft and hold, you can plan accordingly. Like I did that with Royce Lewis in the meatball draft we talked about. I backed him up real quickly with a guy that's not signed yet. So that's cool.
we'll sign.
But you know what I'm trying to say? It's like, you can plan accordingly in those formats. And say even Bregman, he comes back, but he's not fully Neto. For a couple of months, maybe it's like slow going, getting comfortable. You have the availability to play that game. And then if you get even a second half of good Neto with your other replacements, it's still pretty
solid. That's kind of when I ran the numbers. I'm thinking maybe I get four and a half good months of Neto. Yeah. And at 200, I think I'm okay with that. So
that's why I wanted to bring it up. People just need that mindset when they're drafting him. Just be prepared that it could get south. And the Kingery thing, Ryan's joking, but I talked to him about it off air. I wrote about it on the HQ free article last week in the PT tomorrow. Kingery's been very good the last 2 years at AAA. I know it's AAA, but this is a guy, if we like, you know, people love that pedigree word and other stuff like that, was very, very, very highly touted at one point, got that big deal after 1 year in Philadelphia, then it just went crashing down. Well, on AAA last 2 years, power and speed have been very good. Like, we're talking 25-25.
Yeah, 25-25 and 500 plate appearances. Huh?
So, like, if he even just plays for, like, a month while Neto gets ready, it could be worse. Let's put it that way. Like, it's a good little fallback plan around 38. Like,
and again, yes, Kingery's going late 30s round. Yes. So don't go after Bubba when Kingery.
At that point, you're taking all kinds of goofy chances.
Yeah.
All right. Mentioned Royce Lewis a second ago. He was going at 109 in November, dropping to 123. I think people are starting to get a little realizing, okay, this was a problem to finish last season. He finished very poorly, a little banged up at times. I actually wrote in the new update on the news that he came out saying he's working on his flexibility this winter to stay healthy. You know, the yoga program that, you know, Stanton and Judge used to go on, that kind of program. And the part I took away from this, and it doesn't really affect you in a gladiator per se, is he plans on playing every day at either second base or third base.
Look at that. That is in there.
So that was my bigger takeaway, because I'll take whatever, you know, offseason workout program with a massive grain of salt with any player. But when he says he's planning on playing second base or third base every day, that becomes very enticing.
That is interesting. And that is, I mean, until we actually see it, who knows? But that is more encouraging than just reading that the Twins are confident that Royce Lewis is healthy, or even just that Royce Lewis is stretching now. Exactly. The fact that they may even entertain moving him to second base, which is a more strenuous position in terms of movement and that sort of thing. That is interesting. And I honestly, man, like, the first round potential that you could get from a Royce Lewis pick at 123. I know you got in the meatball draft, you got him earlier, but I mean, we drafted that in August before the slide really started in the second half. Like, you could argue there are few hitters that have first round potential going outside the top 100, and Royce Lewis is on that short list. So I don't know if I'm ever taking that plunge, but at 123, it makes it at least palatable if it doesn't work out. Like, it doesn't kill you.
Agreed. Corey Seager, this could kill you. 44-50, still a top, three and a half, four round pick. We've talked about it many times. History inclines an IL stint or two, but the power and the batting average is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't have much to add on Seager. But you know what you're getting and what you're not getting with him. So,
Willy Adames going from 67 to 76 changes ballparks and teams and drops 9 picks.
Yeah, what do you think?
I'm not going to disagree with it. I understand the concerns. I'm more optimistic because I love the skill set of Willy Adames, and I'm a believer that skill sets can outperform any ballpark you put a player in. I'm realistic. I wrote about it, that he will lose some power, and the run production is the biggest concern for me, period, is the run production, runs and RBIs. And then, like you said many times here or the Discord, is will he get to run in San Francisco? There's a ton of questions behind it. There's a ton of questions. I am very well aware of that. I think if you're drafting Willie Adames, you have the hope slash confidence he's going to get to be the same player he was, just with certain team context fallbacks. Nine picks is fine with that mindset to me.
Okay. Interesting that Adames, he's on a complete island at the position. So that 75, yes, 76 ADP so is, yeah, it's 30 picks before the next guy, which is Matt McClain. And I would take Willie Adames all day.
Yep.
It's also 25 picks after the previous shortstop that we just talked about, Corey Seager, and like CJ Abrams both going around pick 50. So you've got Willie Adames kind of out there in no man's land. If you're looking at shortstop as the number 10 shortstop off the board, there's no one within 25 picks of him. And I think properly priced, I mean, at the price, go Adames over Seager. Have to think about that, but I think the new price, I think the fall is warranted, just going from Milwaukee to San Francisco, but I think the magnitude of the fall, just nine picks, is also fine. I think the market's pretty good on this one.
Yeah, I think it's fair, and a lot of it comes with that fallback options situation. So yeah, that's why I'm still drafting Willie Adames and rolling with it and seeing where it goes. Schwarbaum's Kyle Schwarber, 64-72. My guess is it's the way they're building teams, the util only, and especially in a gladiator, people don't like to lock that up so early.
I guess, yeah. I don't know. That's all. Nothing really changed. Yeah.
Yeah. Haosung Kim, 293-327. He's coming back from the shoulder injury. He's not supposed to be ready for the first month or so of the season. Plus, I was reading on Sunday, I believe, the market is very cold on signing Kim because they're concerned about the shoulder as well.
And so I think this drop, like as opposed to Schwarber, it's like, what?
This makes sense.
Is that. Like this is someone who is not only coming off an injury and is going to start the season late, but is a free agent. So like there are free agents like Alex Bregman that we just talked about. You know they're going to sign. I don't think there should be any free agent discount. This was like Matt Chapman last year. Like I think that's a separate category. Haosung Kim, the further he does not get signed, I think we're going to see that ADP continue to drop as it should. I'm worried about Kim if a team is not willing to sign him until spring training or something.
Yep, with you there. You mentioned CJ Abrams earlier going 45-50. I'm guessing it's just people's roster choices. I've actually become more excited about Abrams when I'm doing drafts. I'm shortstop aggressive if I can. So it's kind of like, do I take CJ or do I wait for Willie? Is what it comes down to. So I've been looking at CJ more and more in drafts because I am a believer. I believe there's power. I believe there's tons of speed. I think that was a big learning lesson for him last year. I think we're going to be okay. And I'm more optimistic on the Nats than maybe some others.
Agreed on all accounts. Like I would take Abrams over Corey Seager. They're going side by side. 100%. O'Neal Cruz going a little bit earlier.
I'll take CJ.
I think CJ's the only time
he's only missed games because he gambled. O'Neal gets hurt.
Yeah. You're not going to get the best batting average of CJ Abrams, but yeah, two seasons, 600 plate appearances plus. I like the lineup. Like you said, there is power there. The speed could be, we saw what the speed could be in 2023. This guy's still 24 years old. And so, yeah, the gambling thing, staying up all night before you have a day game the next day, like not great, but the dude's 23.
How many stupid things did we do at 23? Like I have
rather not recount
the whole thing. Like those who have not done throw the first stone. I have no stones near me. Like I can't, like if people knew, being as a crazy person, like, this is not even, I'm not in line here at all. So like, I'll take this one as a learning experience kit.
And maybe this was like the last straw type of thing. There were other things that we don't know about and he won't learn, but I don't know. I think CJ Abrams is, I'm a sympathizer. Uncle Ted, what's the word? Vehemently disagrees.
Yeah,
he says no way ever would he take CJ Abrams over Seager. I get it.
The thing with Abrams that I like a lot, it's the batting average is the biggest deterrent, because if we just go, well, maybe run scored too, maybe I should stop talking, but I see a lot of like Trey Turner stat lines and they're like 25 picks apart.
I mean, 83-79 runs scored last. It's RBI more than anything else.
Yeah, but I think CJ in 24 is another level to him. I think there's a lot to like there.
Yeah.
All right, Marcelo Ozuna, 65-71. To me, it's probably just the util thing.
I guess. I mean, maybe along the same lines as Schwarber. It's kind of funny. Schwarber and Ozuna, right, both the same ADP in November and the same ADP in December. I think I'm going Ozuna from the Braves over Schwarber, but it might depend on your batting average cushion or lack thereof between those
two. Yeah, I think Schwarber I like better overall, but you need the batting average cushion that you mentioned. Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
James Wood, 51-55. That's minor. I'm not too worried about that.
Yep.
Ozzie Albies, 57-62. Albies has been a guy I've had a tough time trying to figure out in draft rooms. I'll be totally honest there. Because second base is not great, as we've talked about recently, Ryan. And it goes like, I just have the DC ADP up, but it's Cattell, Altuve, then Albies, then it drops almost 30 picks to Matt McClain. Like, it's a Matt, then your boy Simeon's right there. There's a lot of jumps at the position. So it's like you said, maybe just wait. And that's why I've had a tough time clicking the Ozzie Albies button.
Yeah, I think we talked about, I'm having trouble like remembering what we talk about either in the Discord or before the show or during the show. I think we talked about last time at the second base in general is somewhere where like I am waiting. There are not many options at the top. It's Albies, Altuve, it's Semien and Ketel Marte at the top. But I feel like there's a good number of 10, 15 home run, 30 plus stolen base, second baseman going in the hundreds, like 110 to 140, 150 range. And that's probably where I'm shopping for second base as opposed to Ozzie Albies. So
yeah, I'm with you there. Andy Páez went 311 to 335. I think that's because of the Conforto signing. People are backing up a bit there. I still
what
think
do you
Páez
think,
is
though?
The
like,
guy. I'm still in on Páez, but I've been very in on him before this. Conforto's going to play every day he gets a chance to play. They paid him for that reason. That's the biggest thing. I still think Páez is the guy. I know Roster Resource, we say it, like, take it for what it's worth. They have Páez playing without a platoon. I think it's also people see Conforto and they're like, they're still going to bring Teoscar back.
That's where I was waiting for you to say is not only was it just Conforto, it was, oh crap, Conforto, and then Teoscar is going to come.
Yeah.
Which, that's probably the most likely landing spot for Teoscar. And then, right, Páez is in a little bit of trouble there from a playing time standpoint. So from that aspect, I get it. But if the Dodgers don't sign Teoscar, I think Andy Páez at 335 is a freaking steal, because I think as it currently stands, Andy Páez is an everyday player. Skills were a lot better than the surface stats let on. I mean, that's what led you to Andy Páez early in draft season. So it's a little bit of a hedge that the Dodgers don't sign Teoscar. They haven't yet. I don't know.
Well, because so far Teoscar is looking, I think, for a 3-year deal. I saw 2 or 3 years. Most people are offering him one. He just wants like that one final contract, basically.
Man,
so
I would too, man. Teoscar's a beast.
I don't blame him at all. I want that pay. I want that pay. So I get it. I know that's why I think Baltimore or Boston's interested. Giants could sign him. I'd be happy with that, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, because Teoscar's not even that old.
No, he's not.
He's 32, I want to say. Yeah, age 32 season next year.
Young, very young.
He's a youth.
Yeah, he's a youth. Yes, he's definitely almost 10 years younger than me. Anthony Santander, 93-100. I'm guessing just because they don't have a landing spot yet. So there's some slight concerns of maybe a platoon or something.
Yeah, but again, this Santander falls in the Bregman camp for me. If this ADP continues to slide, Anthony Santander is going to sign and play. We don't know where, but it's going to happen. So if this continues to slide into the hundreds for Santander, I will grab that power and I will like it.
Jonah Heim, 276-297. This is the Higgy effect.
Yep, this is. So the Higgy effect for sure, basically getting 50-50 split. And you could argue Higgy is actually the better fantasy source on that team. So that's why Jonah Heim is dropped.
Mikel Garcia, 202-216 with India in town. Mikel Garcia should still be the third baseman, but you got Mount Massey. There's more questions around Mikel Garcia right now and not leading off.
I think that's the reason for the drop, at least from November to December. I still like Mikel Garcia quite a bit. I will gladly take him at 216 because I think the playing time will be there. I think it's just going to be lower in the order. But
and then the last one we have here is one Spencer Torkelson, 309 to 331. That's a pretty hefty drop for a first base position that we talk about being so bad. Now, Tork has been bad, to be fair. He's an interesting one just because of value, but I'll get your thoughts on this first.
No, I don't really know why. I mean, was there any news on Tork that I...
Not that I've noticed. I was just looking for more stuff. I haven't seen anything on him news-wise. He's still the starting first baseman as far as I'm concerned, so I'm not 100% sure outside of maybe people just don't want to deal with that batting average. I don't know.
I guess. I look at this. I've taken Tork in my last two draft and holds. I look at this as someone who is locked into a starting job. I mean, as long as he just doesn't crap the bed again, but locked into a starting job, has that 2023 stat line, is only 25, is a former top prospect. Like, I don't know what else you want out of a 300 plus pick. So I think Spencer Torkelson, I don't know why he's dropping, and I disagree with the market here. I think he's a good stab to take outside the top 300, man.
I have a couple of DC shares as well. Michael C is telling us people dug in and realized how badly Tork sucked.
But only last year. That's my thing, man. We look at last year too much. I what if you take the 2023 version? And I mean, it's still the low batting average with that version, but elite power. I think this is a case of the market looking at last year and weighing last year too much, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but if I'm wrong and at 330 ADP, yeah, I'm fine.
Exactly. That's the thing. The price tag, I'll take the chance to get a guy that in reality could be a 30-plus home run bat if things click. So that could be fun as well.
Yep.
All right. Any other takeaways from the Bloom board, Ryan? We got a couple kind of obvious ones, then some weird, like, what the heck are these guys moving for? But it could just be draft context, basically.
Yeah, no, useful for me at least, and hopefully for the listeners out there, to not just analyze each one of these players in a vacuum, but it's almost kind of like a news recap for all these guys, because for most of them, there was a reason they went up and down. So hopefully kind of going through this list helped you all kind of get caught up on the goings and happenings with a market that is pretty in tune with what's going on in news and stuff around these guys. So for the vast majority of these folks, it makes a ton of sense why they are rising or falling.
And it's a good exercise because a lot of people have not drafted yet, so this will make more sense to you to listen to this conversation. Yep. Another thing is, a lot of these signings we talked about in recent weeks, that'll really get affected in the next round of ADP we talk about. Because we already kind of hinted at it when we were talking about, hey, so-and-so signed like a week ago and we've seen as hot as Max or whatever. Man, I always screw it up backwards. Already going up like 30 picks or something. You're going to see a lot more shifting in that regard as well. And then I remembered why Michael C. has Tork thoughts. He's a Tigers
fan. Yeah, that's coming very apparent. The dig at ownership.
Yeah, but at least Pizza Boy, a.k.a. the ownership, won't spend money, so he'll get chances. Yes, I forgot. Once I saw Mott's fight, right, that's right.
Grain of salt there, old Cicchini. Don't be too down on your boys there.
All right, we got some listener questions / comments to discuss real quick. That's a different one. All right, kicking it off with our buddy Joe Rico. Like you mentioned, he said earlier, Trout getting that classic made it through November healthy bump. Yep, that is fair. A couple more here. Bauer Edwards at Stranger_Songs. Abrams can just keep falling. He's not that guy.
Okay. But if he's not that guy, you want Abrams to rise because then you're not taking him. But I guess he's agreeing with the fall, which there are plenty of. See, I will fully admit I am high. I was higher on Abrams than most last year, and maybe I'm stubborn. I'm higher on Abrams than most again this year.
I'm getting it. Like I said, the more I draft and look into stuff, it's much more appealing to me.
The other interesting, just real quick, before Michael sees rant about Detroit ownership and Spencer Torkelson. And I agree, this is a pitching range of the draft where Abrams is going, was it 50? That's where a lot of teams are starting to take, you know, that third, fourth round pitcher in that yellow brick road pitching run. So there is that too.
Frank Amarante says Seager and Albies are gifts. Okay.
Not gifts that I want under my tree.
Yeah, that's what pole? No, what, it must be South Pole gifts.
Albies is fine. Albies is fine. Seager, I still,
I've been anti-Seager forever, so I'll stick by that one. In the Discord, Aaron Gifts says, Neto and Horner going lower and lower every draft I'm in. At what point do they become a value with return time uncertainty? You already are in on Neto. If we're talking Horner.
Yeah, he wasn't on the list, but I'm pulling him up. Or was he on the list? And I missed it.
Well, I got DC up. He's at 204 right now. As high as 170, as low as 225. Okay. I know I should just pull Gladiator like an idiot.
Well, there is. I think with Nico, it is, unless I've seen something or I have missed something, it's not similar to Neto, but there just hasn't been much information on Nico, who could miss a chunk of time to start the season.
Yeah, I'm interested in Neto, but I haven't seen anything. I have not seen an update either, so I get the concern. And then Michael C. in the Discord said, I get that there are new second, third rounders, the Jackson, Duran, but Seager going down seems weird. He was a mid-second last year. Was that too high, given likely plate appearances, more firm since he's an IL risk, or overreaction? I think it's the IL situation, personally.
Yeah, I think so. Or just, again, it's just six picks, so it could just be... Yeah. Could just be variance. I don't think there's a reason for Seager to fall much more. And again, I know we're both down on him, but he could be a very legitimate four category shortstop, to Uncle Ted's point in the chat. But yeah, we've stated the reasons for not wanting Seager many times, so we'll leave it at that.
Our buddy Brant Chesser, who you mentioned earlier in the show, he says, do y'all like Xavier Edwards as a middle infielder, 2.5 to 3 category player? Not really at his price tag. I've been kind of out, but what about you?
Same. I just don't like taking a zero in home runs.
Powers.
It's just hard to.
Yeah, I've talked about power, something I'm trying to focus much more on this draft season. So
that
makes him difficult. He says, any concerns on Abrams? We're both on Abrams. Do you think he falls more is the question?
Abrams?
Yeah.
No, I don't think he falls anymore. Shouldn't, but I don't know.
Buddy Heath Caps just has a couple comments here. He says, he says, not a question, but yikes at Cal Raleigh. You got to pay the piper on that one.
I'm guessing that's just a yikes at the price of 81. I mean, this is someone who is the best power hitting catcher in baseball, but that is why he's at 81. If Cal Raleigh ever got traded out of Seattle, man,
that'd be fun.
Oh,
be fun. Be
sweet.
And he says, Schwarbs at util only is such a bummer. Yep, agree with you on that as well. In the chat here.
Yeah, Adam, we've got some Mikel Garcia back and forth. I like it.
Yeah, Adam Lee says, Mikel at 216. He was a top 100 overall roto player last year. Impacts the ball decently as well. Not shown as an injury risk. Good for Gladiator and roto leagues at the price. What about you? What do you got there?
I agree with Adam. We have Michael here as well. He says, I don't get Mikel over India, though. Garcia could be a utility player / empty stolen base guy, which, I think that's the floor with Mikel Garcia for sure. I just think that the floor ceiling proposition at pick 216, to Adam's point, I think that's somewhere I'm willing to go and take that risk.
And then a fun one here, our buddy Kevin Hastings. I have a complaint to file with management. If I don't listen live, my Spotify episodes are full of AARP ads. No more old jokes. I would love to know how the ads get picked, because I know for a fact when I listen close to home or if I listen somewhere else, the ads are actually based on my location. It's weird. I have no clue how it works.
I was this was weird. I always do this at the end of the year. I look at like my retirement and finances and stuff, and I use Fidelity. So I'm Googling all this stuff. And sure enough, the next podcast I listen to are ads for Fidelity Retirement built into the podcast. I was like, Jesus, that's weird.
Yeah, they're always listening, folks. Always listening. And then Adam Lee's got another comment here. Neto, a 2020 player, close to 200. What? I think it's because of their lay management. There's player bias and the injury. All right. Any final thoughts, Ryan, before we head out of here on another fun Bloom Board episode? And then we'll be back Thursday, the day after Christmas, with another Bloom Board talking pitching.
Yeah. Back on the normal schedule Thursday night with the pitchers. This was a good time. Anyone still listening at this point, wish you all a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate out there. Hope it's Hope it's fun, safe, and you are recharged from a fantasy aspect, because once January hits, my friend, we're going full bore. We'll have our New Year's resolution show that will drop on either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day morning. And we are ready to go for a fun 2025. But yeah, until then, I will enjoy the holiday. Hope you do the same, Bubba, and all the listeners out there. Hope it's a good one.
Yep, I echo that. Hope you all the listeners have a wonderful holiday season and Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you're celebrating, because Hanukkah and Kwanzaa both start on Thursday. So yep. You got a lot of fun stuff there. So whatever you're celebrating, hope you have fun with friends, family, whatever. Stay safe out there. Support the show because we love you. But last but not least, to my co-host, hope you have a fun one with the family, and good luck building your last thing. So I can't wait to hear how that goes when we talk in between now and then.
It's a scooter, so there's like injury risk if I don't build the damn thing right.
There's
so
liability on that one, buddy. Wow, this gets even more fun. So good luck with that, my friend. This is why I just pay to get things built, because I'm horrible at it. All right, well, we'll wrap it up there for everybody. This was Ryan on Twitter at RyanVHQ. That threw me off for a second. The podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BDentric. And for now, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 198. Catch y'all next time.